Hey everybody, what's going on? My name is DJ and this is the Restaurant Growth Podcast presented by 7Shifts. On this show, we sit down with the best minds in the hospitality business to bring you new insights and big ideas to help your restaurant grow. Danny Klein joins us in the virtual studio this week. As the editorial director at Food News Media, which publishes both FSR Full Service and QSR Quick Service Restaurant magazines, Danny has a 30,000 foot view of everything that's going on in our industry. So from curbside pickup to QR codes to the labor shortage to loyalty, Danny has a ton of knowledge to share. It's an episode that's just packed with breakdowns, some hot takes, and I just know you'll leave with a ton of valuable insights and new understanding of what's going on right now and take it back to your restaurant and share with your team and make changes that are impactful. And as always, I'd love to hear from you, whether it's something you like, someone you want to hear, or you're just interested in 7Shifts, do not hesitate to message me. My email is in the show notes. And without further ado, here's my chat with Danny. Hey, Danny, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
A nice North Carolina spring day here, which is 40 degrees in the morning and
nice.
75 degrees in the afternoon, which is one of the strange things about North Carolina is it's both really hot and really cold. So get the best of everything, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of similar here in New York. It's really super cold in the mornings, and then as soon as the sun comes out, it's like suddenly it's shorts weather. And then the next day is 30 degrees. So,
well, the difference in New York though is in the summer, you know, at least it's kind of nice at night or at least during the day. Whereas here in the summer, it's hotter than Florida. So
yeah, that's
part
true.
Of it. I did not sign up for when I moved here, but it is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, thanks for coming on the podcast today. Excited to get your take on all the news and everything happening in the industry. But if you just want to begin, just tell us a little bit about what you do at Food News Media, you know, and what your goals are for the restaurant industry.
Sure. So I'm the editorial director of Food News Media. I think I'm actually coming up on a year in that role.
Very nice.
Before that, I was doing just digital related, you know, things here for about 6.5 years. I kind of lose track of time sometimes, but I think that's right. Started out in just the magazine role for FSR, which is one of our properties that covers the full service industry, and then QSR, which is our larger, or at least that it's been around longer. We're actually in our 25th year at QSR. It was launched in 1997, covering the quick service restaurant industry. So in terms of what our goals are, you know, we're a business-to-business publication covering restaurants. We're trying to make life easier for the restaurant owner and operator, franchisee, kind of up and down the ladder.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's keeping them informed about, you know, what their competitors are doing or what the news is out there, which is, you know, kind of how I would, you know, talk about our digital product. And then in our magazine, you know, definitely more of the insights and kind of helping you run your restaurant and talking about larger trends, trying to predict them, trying to be in front of them, you know, offering data, things like that. But really at the end of the day, you know, we're a publication that's here to serve, you know, the restaurant, you know, aficionado, whether or not you're kind of an outsider or you're somebody who's really embedded in it on the day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the breadth of coverage is pretty remarkable. Everything from, you know, brands and financing and quarterly reports and M&A and everything like that into just, you know, great people that are leading great restaurants and your lists and all that. So I don't know how you do it, because I'll go on the website for like 5 minutes and I'm like, well, I've got enough for today. I'm stimulated. So kudos to you for that.
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, we're a pretty lean team, but you know, we all, I think, are very passionate about the industry. I mean, that's kind of the way that I look at things in terms of staffing. You know, I think we could probably teach people a lot of stuff, but at the end of the day, I think we all have to really, truly care about the restaurant world, you know, and be very invested in it. You know, I didn't know that was going to be the case for me when I got involved, but at this point, it's kind of, you know, alongside probably family things and obviously a couple random hobbies of mine, restaurants probably dominates like 60% of my life.
Yeah.
And I embrace that because I think it's a great industry. I think the people are really wonderful for the most part. And yeah, you know, it's been a very dynamic stretch of, you know, 2.5 years here, of course, with the pandemic. But yeah. I think the resiliency has not been overly surprising for those people who are in the industry and have been following it. This is just kind of what food does. You know,
Absolutely.
Everybody wakes up hungry and we keep going on.
Yeah, that's one thing you can't solve permanently. I'm curious though. So you've been writing about food for a number of years now, but before that, you were a sports writer. So how did you make that transition from sports to food?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of I was just in a position really where I was looking around me in the newsroom, and you know, like any newspaper in America, we were dealing with layoffs and consistent layoffs, entire department layoffs, and all that kind of fun stuff. And I would always think to myself, why are people getting laid off? And they were always sharing one characteristic in common, which was just that they had been working there a while. So I thought to myself, well, I'm basically working my way to eventually get fired here. It's like every year I spend in this newsroom, I'm becoming less desirable to them.
Yeah. Because
you know, they're trying to churn, you know, people kind of at that lower, cheaper level with digital skills. And it was just a kind of a vicious cycle that I was watching, and it wasn't stable. I mean, the hours I was working were crazy. It was four to midnight, and I'd been doing that for almost a decade and working at least one day on the weekend every. So I just had this very, very strange life in terms of trying to picture myself having kids and stuff. And I had one coworker who would wake up at like four in the morning just so he could take his kids to work, you know, and he was working that midnight shift with me. And I thought, you know, and he was in his 50s. And I thought to myself, I do not want to be him.
Yeah.
No, that's just not what I want to do when I'm old. So I started to look around, you know, and really, to be honest, in terms of restaurants and food news media, was just falling into it. You know, my wife actually found the job, sent it to me and said, you know, oh, this sounds interesting. We like to eat out, which is kind of the line we get from people who typically apply.
Right.
You know, I interviewed, and of course that's has nothing to do with working here or writing here. I don't review food ever, but yeah, I was able to get the job somehow. Truthfully, it was kind of surprising to me at the time because of experience wise was just so different. But yeah, right off the bat, though, I think there were a lot of similarities between the two sectors, you know, because I've told people before, I mentioned this on other our podcast. It's just that, you know, restaurant folks and sports people share one thing in common, which is that you have to be a little bit crazy to be in this because the margin for error for success is so small.
Yeah.
You know, obviously in sports, it's more of about just the amount or percentage of people who make it is minuscule. And in restaurants, the amount of people who actually make money can be minuscule. So you really get involved for something, you know, beyond just, you know, the dollar figures. And so a lot of the people are kind of similar, you know, in terms of passion and again, how crazy they might be. So it transitioned a little better than I thought it might. And you know, a lot of that, I think, was just really buying into believing what's happening here and understanding the importance of it.
Absolutely. And there's always that crossover too. It seems like whenever a big name athlete retires, they open a restaurant or something like that. So.
Right. Yeah. My my last job was right next to Vince Carter's restaurant, which doesn't exist anymore, but it was not it wasn't a great. I mean, a lot of times they don't end up being so awesome. What you see it now a lot of times is, you know, fast food restaurants or they end up getting franchisees in the sports world who are stepping into it. Dwayne Wade, you know, Shaq, of course. And that seems to be an investment that a lot of athletes are very comfortable with. And you'll keep seeing them. Of course, LeBron James is involved in Blaze Pizza and Durant has some, you know, pizza things going on. So either way, I think that's really where the connection. I think the days of the branded athlete restaurant outside of like Michael Jordan's, I know Vince Young has a steakhouse.
Yeah.
That may be a less common thing moving forward, but who knows?
Yeah. And we have Clyde Frazier's Wine and Dine or whatever it is here in the city too. But yeah, definitely a big thing. Athletes opening restaurants, Drew Brees too with walk-ons and, know, it's not going any away. But the virtual brands too. But, you know, I want to get your take a little bit on the current state of the restaurant business right now, because there's kind of two really, I feel like, sides. You know, on one hand, you have the independents who still need a ton of help, which I think is evidenced by, you know, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which is seeing some more attention right now. I know the House just voted to refund it. But then, you know, you go on QSR and it's all these chains like BurgerFi and Wingstop. You know, are growing rapidly and they're doing huge numbers. you know, Chick-fil-A and McDonald's, and everyone just has grown in that sector. So what's your take on that, and what do you think is going on in the industry?
Yeah, well, that's really been the case since day one, to be honest. And
yeah,
I think it ended up, I think that fast food restaurants or quick service in general at the beginning, you know, struggled like a lot of brands, because there was a sense of, I think people weren't even sure if going to the drive-thru was safe. You know, I remember reading a story about, can you pick up your Amazon box and get COVID from the cardboard?
Yeah.
but, you know, once that kind of went away, you know, I don't want to say that quick service was pandemic proof, but they were definitely pandemic resilient. So once that became obvious, you know, once you had this 90% of mix running through the drive-through, you know, the sector became exceptionally hot, not just from a standpoint of sales, but also from a real estate perspective. You know, we were talking to Robin over at We Sell Restaurants, and, you know, she was saying that the quick service, you know, box right now in terms of buying and selling is one of the hottest, you know, properties in retail right now. Of course, the drive-through being kind of the champion of that, you know, because what ended up happening is, you know, you started to couple this drive-through business, you know, with higher digital, because people were going through these channels that they had to when they had no other choice. And then once some of the dine-in came back, you had a lot more transactions flowing through sort of that omni-channel world than you did pre-COVID. And also beyond that, you just, you know, you look at kind of loyalty programs, McDonald's and Chipotle, you know, they all entered. I mean, McDonald's didn't even have one at the beginning of the pandemic. Chipotle had one with something like 9 million people. And these surged well beyond 20 million because, again, people sat there and said, okay, well, I want to order ahead now because, you know, maybe I don't want to go inside, or maybe I just want to run in and grab it off the shelf. Maybe I want to get curbside. So out of sheer necessity, they went through all these different, you know, digital ordering platforms, and that mobile order ahead transaction has been really probably the number one, you know, game changer in quick service to come out of this, that has really transformed the industry, because you have now this occasion of convenience that's probably was something that the consumer wanted before the pandemic, but you know, really weren't getting, at least not regularly. And now it's there. So now you have these massive amounts of people who've been going to all these quick service restaurants throughout the pandemic, and they're still going to them. So really, that's kind of what has happened. And so, you know, at the same time, you know, they're flush with cash on a variety of levels, either from their performance, from the fact that they're good investments for people to go out there and make, from the brands that went public like BurgerFi. And also, you know, you had these early day, you know, COVID stories coming out where people were pulling down on revolvers and all these different things, and just, you know, saying, okay, now we have X on our balance sheet in case we deal with more COVID disruptions. And then when they ended up bouncing back much quicker and then going even above 2019 levels, now they suddenly have tons of money. That's why you're seeing a lot of the actual unit growth now, because they're able to go and grab, you know, some of these real estate pieces that, you know, before they might have been a little bit hesitant on, because A, they can look at it differently. They could say, okay, even if I don't generate a lot of traffic to my restaurant, I could go through, you know, delivery, or I could go through some kind of virtual brand, and I can make this location work. So they're just starting to scoop up all these spots. And in some cases, that is closures, you know, that from that rationalization of what happened. And again, so that's really where the divide is being formed. And, you know, it's one where we keep talking about it in terms of the big getting bigger, and you want the consolidation, especially now with all the challenges in supply and the higher costs, is that you're seeing a lot of brands who want to pool those resources, you know, because there's a lot of power in that sort of that focus brands, multi-diversified, you know, operation, or Inspire brands, or, you know, restaurant brands international buying, you know, Firehouse and things like that. You're going to keep seeing, because, again, there's a lot of ability now to cross fertilize some of that digital business, the loyalty, the information, the data. But again, going back now on the other hand to independents. So the problem here is that most independents, and this is not really a knock on them, this is just part of how they've operated, they did not have a ton of, you know, cash on hand. You know, at the beginning of COVID, most of these people have something like, I remember reading like 2-3 weeks, you know, in reserve. And that's okay. That's just kind of how they've operated. It's a family business. There's three people running, whatever it might be. And so the this whole start-stop start process of COVID, brought on by regulations and whether they can open and close and go get inventory again, all that was just really not conducive to being an independent restaurant.
No.
And how they operate. And of course, then it comes back to the dine in. So you have a lot of brand independents now who are doing completely fine in terms of demand. You know, they've got lines out the door, they've got more business that they can serve, and that they can staff up for, and all those kind of great things. However, the costs are just burying them, and then they're saddled with debt, that comes from these months of these issues, including some of those federal aid programs. And I don't even really want to get into the issues with those.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dark rabbit hole, but those really, in some cases, I mean, we saw a brand a few weeks ago end up going bankrupt because basically they took, out one of the federal loans, and with the idea that we need this money, we'll kind of figure it out later. And they really weren't able to get it forgiven because of how they used it. But the way that it was split to being sort of, you had to use it X on payroll. And again, this was a catch 22 at the time because no one had enough staff.
Right.
And then you didn't need enough staff because you didn't really need to use 60 or 75% or whatever it was at the time on payroll because you didn't have that many customers. You really needed the money on fixed costs like rent and, things like that. So it really, in some cases, didn't help independent operators. And so now they're standing at the point, where we've got all these issues going on in terms of supply, and just the delays and what ingredients cost and the commodities and all that is so much harsher to an independent operator than a large quick service chain. And then you tack that on top of the fact that they've been going through this for over 2 years, and you have kind of a cycle where one group of people is struggling, and probably is not eager to grow right now.
Yeah.
And then another who sees opportunity in spades, and whether or not the consumer is asking for quick service restaurants to scale across America at levels we haven't seen in probably 3 decades, I don't know. And we'll probably see what happens in a couple of years, but that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that independence, is there any sort of path forward, or is there any advantage that they have over all of this? Because it almost seems like it's two different industries. It's like the independent restaurant industry is completely separated from this, quick service and these big multi-unit brands.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different industry because one is like a transaction center and the other is, a hospitality one. They're just different.
Right.
Now, I do think there's opportunity because I think if you can get through whatever it is we want to call what's happening right now, and hopefully it sort of settles a little bit, I do think that the consumer is going to really want those local restaurants. They want to support them. They want to eat that kind of food. And, you saw this happen truthfully, maybe a decade or so ago when fast casual really erupted because of the fact that was born out of demand, that there was too much quick service and too much casual dining, and it was over leveraged and the guest wanted something a little bit different, a little bit more, global flavors, brands that wore their ethos on their sleeves a little bit that they could align with. And to be fair, quick service had become a lot better at all these things, but at the end of the day, they're going to miss the neighborhood restaurants.
Yep.
And so if you can get through the fog, so to speak, I don't think those brands are going to have any, or those independents are going to have any time actually filling their dining rooms. Now, whether they can make it work financially with what's happening externally in the world, let's all hope that stuff calms down. I mean, it's kind of hard to predict anything right now, but the commodity world right now is a roller coaster, and it's very hard. You think about an independent, someone once put it to me like this. It's like if you said to somebody, you have a dinner party tomorrow for 100 people.
Yeah.
Can you get the ingredients for that?
Yeah. Because
they have to look at it like that sometimes, especially again when it was in that period where they were being asked to close and open again.
Right.
It's not the same, it's not the same kind of back of the house, inventory conversation. So you really have to continually refresh that. And it's very difficult to do that if you can't predict the actual traffic inside.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just reading your piece, on inflation and higher prices and, saying that most, I think it's at 75% of like millennials and Gen Z saying that restaurants are an essential part of their life. So it's, I don't know that they're talking about going to a quick service like a, Chipotle or, not to name names. That's just the first one that comes to mind for me. They're probably talking about local places. And like you said, there's no trouble filling the demand. It's like having enough staff, one, to feed the demand, and then being able to afford ingredients and, paper goods and all of that with those rising prices.
Right. And so this idea is what's given rise to this thing that we're doing at FSR that we call Next Gen Casual, which is basically it's just a new name for a category that we started to label about, I think it was in November, although we've been talking about it for a lot longer. So what this essentially is a combination of those two worlds, because you have a section of chains basically in the full service space who operate and live the world of being an independent restaurant and how they look inside, the type of food that they offer. Yet they are mid-size and they're growing, so they kind of are able to handle what's happening, yet at the same time give the consumer what they want and also deliver on some of the convenience and tech things that are out of reach for a lot of independents from just from a financial standpoint. And it's a category that exists, it's not going into fine dining. It's sort of what we would call, before I think people would call it upscale casual or polished casual. But to me, those two terms, I just never heard anybody outside the industry ever say that. And I don't think it even really did it justice, because it makes it sound almost like it's fancier. And that's really not the case. It's actually more accessible. So there's a lot of brands in that world, like Drew Brees' walk-ons and Agave Rye's one I talked to recently. So we actually created a council for this recently that
Oh, cool.
takes a lot of the CEOs and executives from, I think it's 10 of the brands to start with, and we're just going to kind of talk about how to move the category forward and how to take full service dining into the future, because it is really a reflection of these things going on. Like, how do you offer convenience yet still offer experience and basically, like you said, to the consumer who sees restaurants as such a vital part of their life, to go out with friends and family, and how do you do that yet, also be like a local restaurant?
And it's like taking the local restaurant blueprint, and giving it a really strong brand, but then with those, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're adding extra units, so you kind of have more of that leverage when it comes to buying inventory or staffing or you're able to have more cash on hand, provide that casual experience, but have some of the benefits of a big multi-unit brand.
Right, exactly. I mean, I talked to someone very early on. This was during the PPP programs, and they said to me, I don't have a CFO. Like, I don't have a CFO on staff. I have no idea how to navigate this craziness. And if you read through any of the, language around when those programs were coming out, I mean, it was basically impossible to figure out what you were supposed to do. And that's a hard thing to deal with. And, you're one person trying to run a restaurant. You're trying to deal with delivering to go and delivery and all this stuff going on. And yeah, it's very difficult. So to your point, to have some of that background, behind you is becoming, I think you're probably going to see a lot of brands start to sell in full service in the coming months too, or get investments on the capital side, because they're going to look for that support as much as they need the money.
Absolutely. And then also, I think with the rising costs and inflation, do you think we've kind of seen most of that yet, or is the worst, or I don't want to say the worst, but the biggest impact, I'll say, is yet to come?
I have no idea. I think have to think that we've probably seen the worst, right? I just, at least around me, gas is starting to come down, but who knows? I mean, it's impossible to try to figure those type of things. It's always one thing, and then it changes what's costing the most. The next day, it's lumber, and then it's steel, and then it's chicken, and then it's,
Avocados.
right, avocados. It's very hard to kind of know. I mean, you don't know what kind of things are going to happen in the world to influence this stuff. Of course, people didn't know a war was coming and all this kind of stuff. And so I don't know. I mean, I don't think we've seen the end of restaurants raising their prices. That's just becoming a reality of what's happening, and that probably continues. But again, whether or not some of the commodity inflation lasts all year or if it tapers off or if it gets worse.
Who knows? Remains to be seen, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to track it on like a week-by-week basis too. I think it almost seems silly to do so because you're just going to wind up spinning in circles because gas is going up and gas is going down. And you're like, yeah. Right.
Well, to your point again of why some people are growing, if you want to grow right now, you basically have to order all the things like walk-in coolers and things months and months in advance. I mean, you're basically, yeah. I've seen multiple restaurant chains or franchisors essentially act almost like a, you know, they're buying all this stuff and then selling them back to the franchisees who they're recruiting to grow because they have to understand that if you sign up somebody without doing that, you know, you got to tell them it's going to take you a year to open this because you can't get nothing.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. So that kind of leverage is just hard to recreate. But again, I think that's become a very common practice these days is, you know, these brands actually selling equipment to people that they're having come in as operators. And
interesting.
That speaks to just the strange dynamics at hand. And again, why it's favoring some concepts over others.
Yeah. And just like being able to have that leverage to buy bulk ovens and pay extra to have things expedited and then grow and probably provide, you know, franchisees with, you know, better deals and all of that and just gives them more of that advantage. You know, moving forward, this next gen casual, I think, is probably going to be a huge trend. But what else are you looking at trend wise in the business? I mean, this could be anything from menus to operations. You know, what are the big things to look for this year and then even into next year?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we're all trying to figure out right now which of these kind of reactions during COVID are ones that are worth keeping around.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of conversations recently with people about curbside and whether or not what we think about that going forward. Because it was all the rage. And then now you're in a quick service space where I think the majority of quick service restaurants or the consumers for sure, rather just go through the drive through, and the brand would rather you do that too, because they don't really want to send somebody outside to come give you your food because of course we all know labor is a problem. There don't have enough people. You know, if you're talking about in Chicago or something in the middle of the winter, I mean, who on staff is drawing the short straw to run out to the car, you know, in 5-degree weather.
Yeah.
It's not a labor friendly transaction.
No.
But it was obviously an essential one because at the time you had to do that and you had to reduce some of the capacity in other places like the drive through. And I think that still exists. And I think in casual dining, it'll still have a place, but you're seeing brands like, you know, Texas Roadhouse and Applebee's, they're putting windows up on units. And to me, that pickup window, I don't think it got enough press or early during the pandemic, and the reason being it wasn't that easy to just add that in there. But if I look to the future, you know, and we remember writing a lot of things about curbside being sort of the great drive-through, you know, basically leveling the playing field for brands who didn't have one.
And I think
in the end the pickup window may end up doing that more than curbside will, especially for fast casual. Chipotle sort of set that standard of we're going to open these Chipotle lanes and people are going to come in and out in 12 seconds because that ability to order on your phone and then just go grab it without talking to anybody or yelling at a drive through menu board and worrying about that experience is really, I mean, in terms of removing friction, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah.
So now you're seeing brands of all kinds of fast casuals rush into that world, and including some big fast food chains are offering franchisees options to do that kind of as a side or even walk up windows. You know, Sweetgreen is doing a drive through, and you know, Shake Shack's drive throughs have lanes that are dedicated just to mobile orders. And I think that kind of world is going to continue because restaurants really want to push you through that funnel, you know, to get a customer into the rewards at this point. Especially in quick service, is kind of becoming the great battleground because everybody's trying to deal with margin erosion that's stemming from a lot of different places, but definitely from delivery.
Yeah.
And so the much better place for them is if you pick up. So how can we make that worth your time? One place is obviously convenience, and then the other is going to be cost. You know, you're going to pay less because you're not fronting the fees. You know, and then now what you're seeing even further is you're seeing brands like Shake Shack charge a very significant uptick on, you know, delivery. If you want to go through, you know, you're going to see 10-15% higher just to get that. And then you're going to still see the marketing and say, oh, or you can come, you know, roll through here.
Yep.
And so you'll see discounts run through these areas, different type of incentives. And I think that's where, you know, in quick service, they owe, you know, these so-called value wars. And it used to be about the dollar menu. But to me now, it's going to be about the incentive opportunity. And I think that's going to really play out in the loyalty realm, you know, and who can chase that kind of consumer to get them to come more often. And if you got to offer somebody value, because of course they're paying for more everywhere in their life right now, maybe you do it that way, you know, and that's where
the rewards
get kind of a win-win for everybody. And then of course you have the data. So I think that's really, you know, going into the near term here in terms of trends is really loyalty, data, rewards, value. How does that, and of course all that through kind of the pickup windows and the different access points.
Yeah. So almost kind of these big brands are almost acknowledging that delivery from a cost standpoint and margin standpoint is just not worth doing. And it's worth it for them to funnel people into this pickup thing. That's why a lot of the time you go on like a big app and it'll be like, well, no rewards for delivery orders. If you want rewards, you have to pick it up.
Exactly.
Like I can't accumulate points if I do delivery. And they're almost like, we don't even want to, I mean, they're going to offer it because that's what people want, but funneling people towards that pickup is huge. Is there anything that independents can kind of glean from that and start offering loyalty? I know a lot of the POS systems and there's a lot of tech out there that makes that possible for them. But can they compete with the big guys?
I mean, there are definitely, I think loyalty has its place in that world and it can be really experience driven, almost like a VIP program over being discount driven. You know, I think I've seen a lot of casual chains do that over the years where, you know, becoming a rewards member is almost about getting invited to X, you know, wine dinner as much as it is about, you know, you getting some kind of coupon. Because I think those type of brands, independents, they have to court experience, you know, that they're not going to play in the value world with quick service restaurants. It's just not going to happen. So for them, you know, I remember talking to this one brand up in Massachusetts and, you know, have really large loyalty program, you know, wasn't kind of the tech centric, you know, ones you might see, you know, quick service, but it had a huge following in terms of people who were on there and every month would get invited to the same kind of special event that they were doing. And, you know, they were talking, you know, 50,000-60,000, you know, people in here at a, you know, relatively small operation. So I think those type of programs, you know, to find ways to get, you know, consumers into there, I think is very valuable, you know, and maybe it does come down to just trying to give them a different option to delivery in terms of whether or not they could save somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I think more than that, it really will be about how can you create a community of loyal diners who you're giving them a reason to come back. And for independents, that opportunity is as big or if not greater than it is for quick service, because you tend to have, you know, really loyal, you know, guests. You know, you have people who, I mean, I've talked to people who go to the same local place 3-4 times a week and have been doing it for years and it's generational and they pass it down. So, you know, maybe it's a texting program, maybe it's an email program, but just what are ways that you can offer that person, you know, something to join where you're constantly communicating with them, letting them know what's happening, giving them options to support you. And so I think there's a lot of white space there. It's just going to be different, you know,
totally.
It may not unfold in the same way.
Yep. Yeah, it's where I think quick serve can offer you, you know, a free Doritos taco, and that's kind of the thing. It my local bar can't offer me a free burger or like free drinks. They're just not going to be able to afford that. But what they can do is take one of their nights off and have special events for loyal customers or texting programs. Hey DJ, come in. We have some new beers on tap.
A tap night where they have a brewery, local brewery come in, or a tap takeover. I was trying to remember what that was called. It's been so long since I've been to a bar. But, you know, so that type of thing. Again, it's like, what kind of value can we provide our customers in that world? And it's not going to be straight on the price. It's going to be on the experience. So, yeah, if they say, hey, you know, Wicked Weed, it's kind of North Carolina out here. You know, Wicked Weed's coming in, you know, and only, you know, they're going to let the rewards people know. That gives you a reason to be in that program. I have a local restaurant here. Yep. Ever since I had kids, I have not been there, but I've been on the email program for a long time, and they'll send things out like that, you know, like Friday night, you know, we're doing our anniversary dinner. Here's the menu. Here's the reservation link. And so it gives you like a, you know, a VIP type of feel that you feel connected. And of course you want to participate. So I think that's where it is.
Yeah, definitely. Any other big like pandemic pivots, as they call them, that you think are kind of going to fall by the wayside? There'll be more relics of the era.
Yeah,
than
well,
permanent change.
So QR codes are one that keep coming up. Well, so I'm a believer in the QR code as a payment option. I think that serves a purpose to people. I was at a restaurant not too long ago where it was on the receipt. There was a QR code on there to pay. That was cool because, you know, I don't think people really miss, you know, handing their card to somebody. I think you can get rid of that. That's mostly a win for the majority of customers. You know, contactless payment is great. So, you know, a lot of times you see, you know, things on the table, but, you know, them like an actual device, and that may not be for everybody. But could you put a QR code there, you know, to pay? Can you put it in the receipt, like I mentioned? I think that serves a purpose, and also QR codes to do things like sign up for loyalty. And I think most brands that I talk to, you know, they're going to leave it there in terms of like, if you want to look at the menu through here, you can. But the amount of restaurants who have them as, you know, ordering systems, I think there will be some that keep them. You know, Bar Taco is a chain that really saw a lot of success doing that, especially from the labor perspective. And I think their customer was pretty, you know, ready for it because they were ordering off of like check cards, like a sushi restaurant. So it really was like a digital extension. However, for the type of restaurants that added them to reduce contact, you know, between servers and people, I think that's starting to fade away because most people now who are paying more and going to full service restaurants want that interaction. They want to be served. Otherwise it feels, I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times I've been out with, I mean, not to knock older people, but especially with some older people who do that and are like, what did I just pay for? Who am I tipping and why am I tipping them? And I think that mindset is starting to pulse because of what everything costs. And if people are going to go through, and also because of how convenient quick serves have become and how much better they've gotten at this, is that if you're going to a full service restaurant and you're doing that, I think it muddies the experience at a lot of brands that were known for something else before. Again, this is not this. I do think it fits in some places, but in terms of the, you know, order on the QR code, keep ordering on the QR code. For every full service restaurant, as it felt like at the time, I mean, I've talked to a lot of operators who are moving very quickly away from that because the guests did not really appreciate it once they got past that initial stage. So again, I'm not saying the QR code is dead. I think A, it needs to evolve, and I think it needs to get to be a better experience instead of just kind of one that we needed. And I think you're seeing that. I think you're seeing a lot of brands. I talked to someone who talked about it, like maybe you pull it up and it gives you an augmented reality picture of the menu, and that's cool, right? So I think guests would be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome.
That would be cool.
The way it is now, or the way it was during a lot of the pandemic, I think people are probably don't really want anymore.
Yeah, the QR code menu, I think, is not, especially like a PDF of the menu linked, it's just not a great experience. You know, and leaning back in on that, like experience and loyalty, and that you want to give people like memorable, good experiences. I don't really want to be on my phone at like my local bar. I don't care if it's at, you know, Chipotle, but especially for beverage.
Well, you know, and an underrated part of that is I've heard this from people recently. Is like when you would go out on the QR code experience back in, you know, the early days, and you were trying to order, and then you got to the end, and you had multiple people on the check. And so you're trying to figure that part of it out. A, there was friction there because it was complicated on a certain level or people didn't understand, then you had to ask the server. But beyond that, and this is just this goes back, I feel like, as old as time of dining out at restaurants, is that people want to pay for other people when they go out. It's like a certain it's the same thing with tipping in a lot of times where it's like there's a certain element of control that you're exercising in this part of your life that maybe you don't get to otherwise, you know, whether that's a date or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so grabbing that check and just putting the card down or whatever it might be and just being like, I'll take this. As simple as that sounds, people actually did miss that. It sounds elemental, yeah. And it is, but a lot of dining out is elemental because yeah. It comes down
That's
to
funny.
Like what
That's
we
true.
As people need and want to be treated, and you want to treat somebody else. And there was an element of that QR code check splitting that felt very robotic. And again, it fits for certain concepts. Yeah. I think, again, Bar Taco is one of them. I think for a lot of
yeah. You
know, Bar Taco's former sister concept, Barcelona, doesn't work for them. Because that's not why people were going there.
Yeah.
They were going there to, you know, sort of embrace the high life for a little, an hour or two. So,
yeah, right. I don't want to be on the phone. And yeah, and missing that kind of back and forth. I got yeah. it. No, look, let me get it.
That
like
stuff.
That kind of, you know, you missed that. And
well, that's how it was. And I think that in a lot of the stuff that happens nowadays, you don't necessarily want to be reminded of what's changed. You know, we all understand it.
That's true.
But you don't necessarily want to go out and dine out and be like, okay, this feels like I'm in some dystopian, you know, aftershock of a global crisis, even if you are. You know, we don't always, we want
yep.
to break from that reality sometimes. And sometimes technology can
totally.
Get in the way. You,
yeah, and that's
you know,
and
you really have to think about that, of what makes your experience as people remember it better instead of replacing some element that was essential to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just, and with that, you know, the last question I have for today for you, and you don't have to, I don't want you to get in trouble with the answer, but, you know, what brands are kind of leading the charge when it comes to employees and providing good experience? You know, if there were brands or a handful of brands you would want to work for, you know, who would those be?
Well, yes, to your point, I'm not going to say anyone in specific because, well, first of all, I've never worked in a restaurant. I worked in a grocery store, but
okay.
So it's hard for me to really say. But here's what I will say about this topic is I think what's becoming very prevalent now is that restaurants, especially quick service, are very, very cognizant of, we've kind of gone past this idea of like, we got to pay people more and we got to give them better benefits packages. Into how can we make life inside
yeah.
the restaurant not so miserable? Because that's really the problem
yeah.
right now. Because, you know, even, you know, of course we know what's going on with Starbucks right now, right? But they're paying $17
yeah.
an hour. So it's not like they're not paying decent money to people. And they have better, or at least
yeah.
on par, you know, benefits to pretty much every quick service restaurant in America. But why are people freaking out? I mean, there are a lot of different reasons, but one of them is the burnout and how crazy difficult it is now and how, you know, they're
yeah.
running at 1,000 miles per hour. And so I think, you know, automation has been something that we've always had in the background of the industry for a long time. It didn't make a ton of sense at times because the ROI was a little bit confusing. Like, do I really want to buy this robot? Like, if people aren't going to be open to it, but most people are open to it now.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, it's becoming cheaper because, you know, it's becoming more, you know, ubiquitous. And then also, again, you really have to start thinking about, you know, restaurant employees are pretty open to doing things like interacting with guests. I think a lot of people get into it for that reason, or that's the part of their job they'll tell you they love the most. So how could I get them to stop working the fryer 6 hours and straight, you know? And so that's why you start to see things like,
yeah,
you know,
Chipotle's
got this, you know, chippy robot, you know, in one test, and White Castle is going, you know, forward with, you know, Flippy as in terms of same company, but, you know, they're making fries, I guess. And so that kind of stuff, I think, has got to be on the minds of restaurants. And, you know, some brands that I've talked to, you know, White Castle and Chipotle, Yum, all have a very good track record of career development and raising people up through the system, which I think are very important things to consider now, because restaurants remain really one of the few, you know, fields that you can get in right out of the gate with no experience and work your way up into something really
yeah.
meaningful, you know. And on the full service side, I just talked to White Castle a couple weeks ago, which was really an interesting conversation. And they're very big on that progression and also incentives. And you know, Fridays too. And two things that they were doing in tandem or similar to each other that actually inspired one to call me was this idea of they were paying you to go on Fridays was paying employees to go on vacation or managers. You know, basically you have to take, it's not PTO, which, you know, who knows what people are going to do with, but you have to take off and go on vacation and not be at work. And I think that kind of stuff, that mindset, you know, is important moving forward of, you know, trying to figure out how you can make people's lives who work at your restaurant better, you know, beyond like, I'm just going to offer you X, 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 and X, because that kind of stuff gets over the head of young people. You know, like, I'm offering you this suite of healthcare. Yep. They're like, okay, I'm 17 years old.
Right, whatever.
But if you could tell them, you know, you can work, pick your hours, you could be flexible, you have the ability to work whatever shifts you want to work, you know, around, you know, whatever you're doing outside of, you know, working here, we understand it's a one stop for you. Or, hey, look, if you work here for a year, we'll give you this, and then you could become a GM and you'll be making six figures. And all that kind of stuff, I think, is sort of surging to the forefront. So in terms of brands doing it, the ones I mentioned, of course, you know, obviously Chick-fil-A does something right. You know, what it actually is, they don't really tell you, but people like working there. So I think there are a lot more examples today of restaurants treating their employees, you know, with a better, more mindful approach than there were before the pandemic. And that came because they didn't have a choice, but at the end, that's a good thing. And I think we all win because of it. But again, there's still a lot of room to grow, because one of the most common things you'll hear of why are my employees quitting is this kind of thing like, well, they could go make the same amount of money, you know, putting tape on boxes in a warehouse. Do they really want to be back in a, you know, it's 120 degrees in the kitchen and they're dealing with, you know, crazy customers half the time. So that's the kind of where the frontier is right now of, how do we make these better jobs for people? You know, because we're going to have fewer of them.
Yep.
I think we all know that. We're not getting that a million people back, you know, in the workforce for restaurants.
Yeah.
So how can we make the people that we do have more cross-functional, you know, want to stay here? Or at least if they don't want to stay here, can we train them quicker and all that kind of stuff? So I think it's moving in the right direction, but it is without a question going to be the biggest problem or hurdle facing the industry for, you know, this year, next, probably for the foreseeable future, because people forget it was the number one problem before the pandemic, you know, so it just got exasperated.
Right.
And, you know, we got a very steep hill to climb.
Yeah. And when you can get 18, 20, 22 an hour, you know, in other industries or any restaurant, it's what are you doing to actually separate yourself from other people. It's not just about that.
You get, and I remember before the pandemic, we were talking a lot about what is minimum wage going to do, because it's all climbing. And it's like that conversation is dead because we're all paying that. So it doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The tipped wage, it's a whole different world. But at the end of the day, there's a Dunkin' by me. I mean, I saw a sign out there the other day. They were offering like $20 to $24 an hour. Right. So, you know, so it isn't about that anymore fully. Of course, that's a big, big part of it. But again, it's like, can you hire someone there and not have them want to leave in 2 months where they say, wow, it's the worst job I had in my life. I don't care what they're paying me. So I just read this thing from Jobless the other day. That was like that something like 80% of the people who are quitting, you know, in this so-called Great Recession, but of the people they polled didn't have anything lined up because there wasn't the same fear of that. It's like, I can go, if I can't work at Dunkin', I'll just walk down the street to Burger King, you know? I guess that's right.
Yeah,
sort of the mindset.
I'll figure it out.
It's like, we have, you know, the workers have all the leverage and they understand that they can go and be very desirable to be hired somewhere. So like to your point, you gotta think beyond, you know, that right now and even beyond the benefits. That's where I think we've come in the last few months, is that's not even enough anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, I think that's all the time we have for today. But Danny, thank you so much. And if people want to find you, where do they find you?
Well, you can come to either of our websites, which are qsrmagazine.com and fsrmagazine.com. We have daily e-letters. They are free to sign up for. Our magazine is also free to get a subscription to if you're an industry professional. But me personally, always available through email, which is danny@foodnewsmedia.com. And of course, if you're a social media person, you can find me on LinkedIn. I do not, I don't really play in the Twitter world. I used to in my sports writing days, but I've kind of let it go because it's a cesspool of insanity. But I am on there. It's just LinkedIn's the best way to reach me. And yeah, we're always available and ready to talk and happy to do so.
Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Thanks again for checking out the Restaurant Growth Podcast presented by 7shifts. We're so grateful to our listeners and we'd love to hear from all of you. Send us an email to podcast@7shifts.com and check us out on social. We're at 7shifts on all platforms. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and we'll see you next week.